Live from the heartland and the crossroads of America, it's Tony Katz today.
So let me get this right, Producer Carl. Hope Hicks, formerly of the Trump White House, the communications director, could have been a model, I think was a model. She is right now testifying in the hush money case against Trump brought by Alvin Bragg, a case that is not a felony by any stretch in terms of what Trump did. Stormy Daniels says she never even got paid hush money, and Hope Hicks is testifying for the prosecution?
I don't know for the prosecution. It's just Fox News is saying that she's testifying right now on the witness stand.
Okay. I'm going to share something with you totally dumb. In my travels, I don't know how it happened. I have never understood how it happened, but I have had This is May 3rd. So for 9 years, I have had Hope Hicks' number in my phone. Tony Katz today. What's going on, everybody? 833-468-8669. That's my number. That's not Hope's number. 833-GOT-TONY. Should I call her?
Absolutely.
By the way, what are the odds it's the same number?
Not likely.
I don't think it's likely at all. I don't even know how I got her number. What was I doing that I was interviewing somebody for the campaign or doing whatever that I got it? But it's here, and every now and then I'll be like, huh, in my phone, and it's still there. What does she have to do with anything? Would Hope Hicks have to do with anything in this trial?
They're saying right now on Fox News that Hicks was made aware of the Access Hollywood tape, and I would assume that they're suggesting that she's covering up for Donald.
So over here at the New York Post is Hope Hicks testified that Donald Trump was very involved, quote unquote, in his 2016 campaign, and she would just be, quote, following his lead, unquote, when it came to media responses. And it was a question of how involved Trump was in campaign messaging strategy. And she said, I would say that Mr. Trump was responsible. He knew what he wanted to say and how to say it. We were all just following his lead. I'm sorry. We've reached a pinnacle of stupid in this trial. We've reached a pinnacle of ridiculous in this trial. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether he did this or did that, whether he controlled this or controlled that. What matters is whether or not he committed a crime. And the answer there is no. There is no crime. That's the story. There is absolutely no crime. So all of this about Hope Hicks being on the stand, this is, it's nothing. It is radically inconsequential. And yet we're going to be told why it matters. And by the way, shame on Fox for doing it. What the hell are you doing? What in the world are you doing? You want a story? Here. I'll gladly give you a story.
News, NBC has learned that the Department of Justice is expected to announce an indictment against long-term Democratic Congressman Henry Cuellar of Texas today. Let's get right to Ryan Nobles with that story. Ryan, what do we know?
Well, Jose, we are expecting the indictment against Congressman Cuellar to be unsealed at some point today, according to sources familiar with the investigation. And right now, the Department of Justice is not commenting on the investigation.
I'll comment on the investigation. The actual indictment itself, unclear, right? His home was raided back in 2022, his home and his office. You know the name Henry Cuellar, congressman, because he is there representing a border district, and he has been strong on the border, making Democrats outrageously unhappy. They raided his home and his office weeks before the election. His lawyer is saying that he was not the target of the investigation. It was ABC News that said the investigation was related to the congressman, to his wife, and one of his campaign staffers, and their, quote, alleged ties to Azerbaijan. Cuellar is actually a member of the Congressional Azerbaijan Caucus. Now, I have no idea what they're making a claim about Cuellar and what he may have done. But I know this, that here is a guy who does talk about securing the border. I'm curious whether or not they're going to push for him to resign. But Senator Bob Menendez is still in the U.S. Senate. Gold Bars Menendez, who clearly was taking whatever it is he was taking from Egypt to do their bidding, and his wife, by the way, who he's totally willing to throw under the bus, still in the Senate. Still there. So this is a great opportunity to set to make your bet and to take a look at how things move and maneuver. We can agree that maybe not all things are equal. But let's see what it is that Democrats do regarding Representative Cuellar, even though we don't have the indictment yet, versus what they have done and will do regarding Senator Bob Menendez, who has announced he will not run as a Democrat for Senate. He will run as an independent. Because he doesn't want to, you know, hurt the party or whatever the nonsense is. Gonna run as an independent as if somehow it's gonna make a difference. As we said from the beginning, if Chris Christie cared, Chris Christie would have run for Senate in New Jersey as a Republican. He would have gotten support. Might not even have been a bad senator. All right, maybe he'd be Romney-like. No, he'd totally be Romney. You know what? Maybe the whole thing was a mistake. But now let's see what Democrats do. Let's see if they actually pay attention to what Bob Menendez has done, the allegations, the bribery, or are they just going to go after a guy who makes them look bad on the border? Because, well, the political left looks very, very bad on the border. Oh, it's going to be fantastic to put this together. Meanwhile, the jobs report is out, and the jobs report is,
Go to Rick. Rick, we know that, you know, there's some people that just... they just think that inflation comes down after unemployment goes up. So we're not going to see inflation come down until we get an uptick in unemployment. So there are people that probably would like a little bit cooler number, but this is you only got 10 seconds to respond. We might as well just wait now until we see what the number is, right?
Yeah, you know, I'm like Stephanie. I want to see people get jobs. So however that plays into the hand of the Fed, that's their concern. And April non-farm payrolls expanded much less than expected, 175,000. We're looking for a number much closer to 250,000. And at least up to this point, in the rearview mirror, 303,000, there are revisions, minus 22,000 for a two-month span. Now, if you look at manufacturing, it went from zero to 8,000, so there is some improvement. And by the way, that 303,000 last month went up 315,000, which means last month, 315,000 was the best since January of 23. Then we go to 175,000, which actually is the weakest since October of last year.
I will sit down with Dr. Matt Will, economist at the University of Indianapolis, and kind of break down this report. But it was crazy to see them. The market jumped so fiercely over this bad jobs report. There was a while there where futures were over 500. The Dow futures were up 500 plus. Right now, the Dow is over 400. The Dow is plus 430 for the day. The NASDAQ is up 300 for the day. Their argument, weak jobs report, means that inflation can come down. That's exactly what the guys at CNBC there, Kernan and Rick Santilli and them were saying. That the fantasy at play here, that somehow this is all good and this is all better. Man, Wall Street is full of you-know-what when it comes to the markets. So I've got Hope Hicks on the stand, which doesn't mean anything. I've got an indictment possibly in Representative Henry Cuellar, where Democrats may pay attention to that, yet somehow let Bob Goldbars Menendez get a pass. And now I've got people cheering a jobs report that shows a weakness in jobs because somehow that's going to bring down inflation. I should just start recommending bourbons every Friday. Friday, we just have ourselves a bourbon, and then we do it again on Monday and Tuesday and Thursday. Wednesday, well, we take that seriously. I'm going to get some bourbon right now. I'm Tony Katz. So I'm scheduled on Newsmax this afternoon. And so you should be after the show, you should be paying attention to that and watching that, because there's nothing else. Everything else on TV is just a total disaster. And part of what we're talking about is Trump and his potential running mate. Been a lot of talk of he's narrowed it down to four people, and Ramaswamy is pretty much out of the running, and Kristi Noem is 1,000% out of the running, just out, and you shot your dog. That is how you end a political career. So this is a true story of the first time I learned that maybe I don't understand how rough and tumble politics is. Tony Katz today. I was living in California and was one of those people who was dumb enough to think, oh, I could run for Congress, right? I hadn't established myself, didn't have a group to which I could fundraise from. I could run for Congress. And I was talking to somebody who knew much more than I did about this possibility. And, well, first things first, is there anything in your past or your history that would preclude you? I don't think so. I don't have any tax issues or whatever. Okay, I once paid late, but sure. And they interrupted me and they said, Tony, have you ever been caught in bed with a dead girl or a live boy? That happened. They asked me that question, to which I said, yeah, no, and I'm not running for Congress. That's insane. By the way, neither one of those things has ever happened. That question was nuts, but it was meant to exemplify the level of insanity that people are looking at. There are some things that you might consider disqualifying that everybody else these days is like, that's nothing. That's nothing. So I did not run then, although I did consider it in the last race. I did. It came up. 2022, it came up. I thought about. I should know it. Well, not 2022. No, this. I thought about running in this election. That's why I started thinking about it. I did not. This is a better place for me to be. I'm a pretty happy man right now. But it came up. It totally did. I bring all of this up. That story, by the way, still gets me. Still absolutely. Like to think of the level of insane of that question. as we're looking at the election, and Trump is taking a look at vice presidential candidates, nobody asked me, hey, did you ever shoot your dog? But I'm pretty sure that also would have been disqualifying. So Trump supposedly has it kind of down to four candidates. And Tim Scott is on the list, the senator from South Carolina. And J.D. Vance is on the list, the senator from Ohio. And Doug Burgum is on the list. Doug Burgum, governor of North Dakota. Let me tell you that I would consider Burgum to be the most long shot. But if you want the guy with the least baggage and the most upside for conservatives, I would say he's your guy. Now, if you want to talk about people of a more religious bent, I would argue then that that would probably be Tim Scott. But I'd be super impressed if Trump took Burgum. Super, super impressed. I'd say that's a solid move. It won't be as loud, but aside from the fact that people are already doing, you know, opposition research, you know they're doing opposition research right now. They never stop, they never rest, they never quit. Of course there's opposition research on all of them, including Doug Burgum. Guy had a business career. The guy has got, you know, his life now. And he's not really somebody who you look at and say, well, there's a lot of drama. And that's, man, there's value in that. I would be thrilled with that. Somebody who has less drama. I don't know if we'll get there. I would consider him really low down on the list. But I would be very, very happy to see it. Yesterday, I referred to the fact that Governor DeSantis signed legislation that bans lab-grown meat in the state of Florida. Please don't get me wrong. I am not a fan of lab-grown meat.
Does that make me crazy?
No, not at all. Doesn't make me crazy in the slightest. It makes me a pretty rational guy. I want to share the possibility of an issue. DeSantis' argument is that lab-grown meat is part of the global elite push to keep people from eating beef and saving the planet. It's these people who do Meatless Monday and all this ridiculousness. I don't have to be any more clear about where I am with a steak.
Cooking a steak, wouldn't it be great? You could be my mate. Cooking a steak. For goodness sake, will you please be my mate and come and cook a steak? Steak.
But I don't know if I want to ban lab-grown meat. To Ron DeSantis' point, and to the point of those who are disgusted with the elites and those who want you to eat bugs and this idea that eating cattle is destroying the planet, so you can't do this, you can't do that, and people want to control every last part of you. I don't think that that's false. I think that that's accurate. But if there's an argument to be made that this type of product can be utilized as a protein source for people who can't get access to other things around the world, I don't know if I want that. I don't know if I want that stopped. As a matter of fact, I don't. Now, I someone can present me with a counter argument. I'm all ears. It's just the idea of saying we don't allow that. I don't know if I want to be the people who say we don't allow that. If you want to say we are supportive of our ranchers and we're supportive of our farmers and we're supportive of that's fine. that we have a commitment to these things first. Also fine. But I don't know how I feel about the idea of saying no to something that could, in parts of at least the globe, if not parts of the country, could be helpful. Unless, of course, you can show me that's totally not helpful, in which case, nobody would want it anyway. I'm Tony Katz.
Looking back, and other people are making this reference, that this may be Biden's Vietnam. Lyndon Johnson, in many respects, was a very, very good president. Domestically, brought forth some major pieces of legislation. He chose not to run in 68 because of opposition to his views on Vietnam. And I worry very much that President Biden is putting himself in a position where he has alienated not just young people, but a lot of the Democratic base.
That's Senator Bernie Sanders, communist Vermont. Oh, I'm sorry. Independent Vermont. Bringing the theory that Biden has done damage by not being more forceful with Israel. But what about what's happened on college campuses all across the country? Has this caused an issue for Joe Biden when it comes to 2024? So much so that he should step away? How about the fact that Benjamin Netanyahu, whom he has excoriated repeatedly, is still going to run for re-election, which is as well not a fait accompli in Israel? Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi, they've gotten highly political on the subject. Hurt Biden? Help Biden? Where does the political fallout start and stop? Tony Katz, Tony Katz Today. Good to be with you. Ed Morrissey joins me right now, managing editor over at hotair.com. His podcast, The Ed Morrissey Show, is available wherever you get your podcasts. And his book, Going Red, the focus on swing voters and the need to expand the Republican and conservative brand through peer-to-peer engagement. You can still find that at amazon.com. Interesting commentary from Bernie Sanders along the lines of, if you take a look at the Summer of Love, 1968, you remind yourself that Nixon won that election and Vietnam went on for years. So we take a look at these riots that have taken place on college campuses. Exactly how much does this hurt the Joe Biden brand?
Well, I think it hurts a lot, and I think there's a lot of people that are worried about that, right? I mean, you've got David Frumin, The Atlantic, warning about it today, saying that you can't both sides this thing, and that the perception of weakness is playing right into Republican hands. And I think it's more than just a perception of weakness, though. It's not that people think that Biden's weak. They certainly do. He's gotten very low marks ever since, you know, the Kabul bug out in August of 2021, which is the inflection point of both his personal favorability and his job approval ratings. They went into the tank immediately after that, and they've never come back up. But I think it's the chaos in the streets that is what really is concerning Democrats, and not just on campuses, but I'm also talking about crime and the perception that, you know, property crime and personal crime are running rampant, especially in cities where there aren't firm prosecutions, right? Where the progressives have taken over the prosecutor's offices and are refusing to prosecute people and keep people in jail with cash bail sets. So it's an overall chaos that repel voters. Voters want, you know, normalcy. They want to feel safe in their communities. And if they're not feeling safe in their communities and they feel as though this is something that is a result of the governance of the, you know, the party in the White House at this point in time, and certainly that's the case, they're going to vote against it. And I would argue, Tony, that that's probably what happened in 2020 as well. I think the chaos of the entire year on top of the pandemic had people panicking and looking for sort of a status quo ante solution to Trump, and that's the reason why Biden narrowly won that election.
Well, let me counter that. I want to talk about the announcement that the White House was considering, and the documentation is out there, the memos are out there, considering bringing Palestinian refugees into the United States. Yeah. And I had seen a post from Guy Benson, a fellow radio host over there at Fox News and Town Hall, one of your compatriots there in the Town Hall world, as hot air is. And Guy had written, "Does Biden want to lose?" And I took it the other way. Isn't this Biden trying to tell his base, look how much I care? Look how much this matters to me? So if the conversation is to the idea of there's too much madness and that can lose you an election, they'll go the other way, is Biden sitting on the fence causing the madness, or is it his actions? Would bringing in Palestinian refugees make his base feel better, or would they be ambivalent?
Well, there's two things in play here. One is what actually happens, and the other is what Joe Biden's thinking. And they're very often not connected to each other. So I think, yes, I think you're absolutely right. That's what Joe Biden's trying to do. That's why he didn't say anything about this for 6 months. I mean, the time to give that speech at the it wasn't even a speech. It was a brief statement in the Roosevelt Room was 6 months ago when these campus actions started.
Just for the record, he's talking about the speech that Joe Biden made regarding what's going on college campuses and how anti-Semitism is unacceptable. I've spent more time in the bathroom than he did on that speech. I just want to be clear.
Well,
you're not giving it enough credit to how absolutely minuscule it was of a statement in regards to the totality of the thing. But please continue.
And not to mention that he spent more time talking about Islamophobia and, you know, Palestinians and Arabs as victims than he talked about anti-Semitism in that same brief speech, right? This bathroom stop, if you will. So what's going on in Biden's head is one thing, and I think that's exactly what he wants to show, is that, you know, when he gets up there and does there are bad people on both sides thing, you know, his what I'm calling the inverse Charlottesville. He's trying to pander to that group of people who think that who need him to show that he cares about this, the radicals on campuses and in and frankly throughout the progressive left's foundation establishment. But what's happening in reality is that 80% of Americans are supporting Israel in this conflict. It's not even close. 67% don't want a ceasefire in Gaza unless Hamas releases all of the hostages first. That's consistent over the last 6 months. He is so far to the left on this that he's practically off the map. He doesn't understand that, but other Democrats do understand that. And that's what you're seeing here, is that you're seeing people trying to now pull things back. They're trying to recalculate messaging. I mean, Chuck Schumer 2 months ago was demanding that Netanyahu resign, Nancy Pelosi as well, and now he's going to invite Netanyahu to speak to a joint session of Congress along with Speaker Mike Johnson. They're gonna get together and send it jointly. I mean. There are Democrats who are starting to figure this out. Joe Biden just simply isn't one of them.
Talking to Ed Morrissey, the managing editor of HotAir.com. The other place where it has to be seen by his party, or at least by his supporters, because I can't tell you if anybody at Columbia or NYU is actually part of his party or think that today's Democratic Party is far too conservative. Israel's made the move on Rafah. They didn't stop. They didn't listen to don't. They didn't do any of that. They made a move in response to Iran after Iran attacked with 350 missiles and drones on civilians. Israel responded with very pinpoint attacks on military installations and areas, even though they were told not to. And then and now we see Israel's making the move on Rafah. So now you have a 1-2 punch where Joe Biden is again not listened to by the terrorist entities, Hamas, Hezbollah, Iran, their supporter, not listened to by what are supposed to be allies like Israel, because Biden is not in anybody's actual best interest and nobody's actually afraid of him. the party starts fracturing over this?
I would like to think so. I don't know that. I don't know that that's the case. I mean, I think that they've basically sold themselves out for Joe Biden, and there's really no going back. You know, to be honest with you, I think that Biden would have been in a better place if Israel if Israel had just done the Rafah op 2 months ago. It would be over by now. The Band-Aid would be ripped off. A lot of the momentum for this stuff would have been taken away. And that's probably coming soon. Israel today is saying, told negotiators in Cairo that Hamas has 1 week to agree to a deal on Israel's latest proposal, and it's either that or they're going to launch the Rafah operation. So 1 week, and so that gives Biden 1 week to figure out if he wants to try to talk Israel out of it, or if he wants to signal at least a little bit of strength behind Israel's threat here to try to get Hamas to start releasing hostages. I would guarantee you that they're going to try to talk Israel out of it for the next 6 days.
But that's the point. They're not.
Yeah.
They're not listening. And so you take these things, right? Biden on Israel versus and Biden on in response to these things happening on campuses, and what I assume will soon grow outside of campuses, like some things have. There's no way this leads to a win with the electorate, Ed. There's just, we've done this long enough. They can't ignore this by saying, well, it's bad, but we have to keep abortion. So this brings us to the ever popular, and I go back to the Bernie Sanders commentary, whether or not he's taken off the ballot. I've argued for forever that Biden will not be the nominee when the convention comes. I had somebody this past week who I know, like, and trust, who knows more than I do, explain why they don't have a choice. Biden will be the nominee. Then you have Bernie Sanders bring this up. Ed Morrissey, with everything that's happening and the inability of this administration to manage any of it, is the Democrats' best bet to change up their guy at the convention?
No, because if they change up, if they press Biden to withdraw, then it becomes Kamala Harris at the top of the ticket. There is no way around that. No way around that. The only way around that is if there was some sort of reason that he became incapacitated. And then maybe, you know, that would be an issue. Enough to open up the convention and make it completely open. But Kamala Harris is the number two position here. And for Democrats to remove Kamala Harris from the ticket in favor of, Gavin Newsom or even Josh Shapiro, who would actually probably be a pretty formidable candidate at this point, would be an absolute nightmare. It'd be an absolute meltdown in the Democrat Party. Biden's the only thing that's really holding them together at this point. There really isn't any alternative. So I think the person that you're talking to has it correct. If Biden had chosen at the beginning of the year, like Lyndon Johnson did, to say, look, I'm done, let's have an open primary and see what happens, then people could have competed against Kamala Harris and gotten the buy-in. But now you're going to be, and this is true of the Republicans too, by the way, you've got people who have been voting in primaries all year long, and they've been voting for Joe Biden, and they've been voting for Donald Trump. And if you go to a convention under those conditions and start doing the backroom, you know, smoke-filled backroom maneuvers to replace either one of these two guys, you're going to have meltdowns in both parties. And I would say legitimately so, because people have been casting their primary votes for these two candidates. Regardless of whether we think that's a good idea, those are the people who won the primaries. And so, yeah, no, I mean, I think that they are stuck with him as long as he's still breathing. He's the nominee.
Ed Morrissey, hotair.com. Before I let you go, there is, you know, talking about what's been happening on the campuses, there is a line that is being attributed. It was heard on Fox. I think it was Fox. Yeah, Fox News. Trisha McLaughlin. The line is, what we're seeing on college campuses, quote, this really is Coachella for communists.
Oh, yeah. This is totally performative, right? For most of them. You know, there's a significant number of these people who aren't even students. And, I mean, I think it was like 20% or 25% at UCLA and something a lot closer to half at Columbia. the people that they arrested inside the building. But the people who are actually students there, totally performative, totally a Coachella sort of thing. They're just there for the vibe. And, that's the reason why you get somebody like Johanna King-Sletsky out there telling the media, well, the school really should be supplying us with food.
Right.
We want some bottled water because the tap water apparently isn't good enough for us.
I mean,
the whole thing is just absurd.
We're going to need some hummus, but it's got to be organic. If we could get that, something gluten-free would also be good.
Gluten-free crackers and free-range hummus.
Yeah, yes. Oh, the free-range hummus is the best hummus. That's Ed Morrissey right there of Hot Air, edmorrisseyhotair.com. I appreciate you taking the time. I've got more to get to. I'm Tony Katz.
Mr. Mayor.
It's the mayor of Chicago running from a reporter. I don't want to answer your questions. Chicago's terrible. I'm a pinko, and I don't want to have to explain myself to nobody. Running into a waiting car. Now, you could say to me, Tony, he had some bad cheese. He had some bad cheese, and you know better than most, and well, this was a certified government emergency. Maybe, if we're talking about bad cheese. Possibly. Otherwise, he's chicken. I'm Tony Katz.